Maybe let's start with one, with the first report. And ask questions. What is this? Now let us find us on the way. And if they come and ask questions, they'll accept those questions if they find us on the way. We'll accommodate them. We can't wait. So any questions from the first report? Are you asking a question? Good. Is it a question? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In relation to the compensation fund, following the organogram that was shown to us, I want to know the compensation commissioner. Are you the only commissioner at the national department, or how many commissioners do consist the commission? And form the commission, and then the compensation board. How many board members are there? And then the chairperson, I do have a lot of questions, but I will try to be brief and cut them down and to limit them. I would like to know, from your presentation, the municipality asked to be exempt from paying then I want to know why. If the municipality worker is hurt or dies during their working hours, are they then exempted? Will there be compensation to the family? The last parliament, we continue being asked by one disabled member. There was concern about workers injured at the workplace. They became disabled. They stayed for a very long time in hospital for months and months. Yet you said that that you tried to fast track in the rehab. But we need to avoid, and I agree what you said, if a person that's been hurt needs to go back to the workplace, I need to know what steps are being taken to make sure a person that became disabled because of that injury is staying for a very long time in hospital without returning them to the workplace. And then that member at the last term, I said they've always been pointing fingers. I said it's the Department of Health responsibility, it's employer's responsibility. But what do we do with that patient that's lying in the hospital that became disabled with an injury? Yet you also said that for disabled person, but then need to go back then to the workplace, but the environment is not accessible. We all always, that's always a very difficult part, is then to get the building accessible. But what is the Department of Labor doing to make sure that this kind of inaccessibility is avoided. If a staff member becomes disabled. And then the compensation fund, I can see the orthopedics. I see them that you, but how much is spent on wheelchairs, on assistive devices, and what is, where is those costs being covered? I want to know if there's an injury and becomes chronic and that's for life, is then the department also then compensating that staff member, then that employee for life? Madam Chair, I think I will stop there.
Any other question? Honorable Nyekemba.
Thank you very much, sir.
And please, your names and the
My name is Eric Nyekemba from the African National Congress. A comment first, sir. I think the presenter was honest to say that they are facing challenges in the compensation fund. And I think these challenges, most of us, we do witness them. Where you will find someone who have got injured, and this person will be told that in a short space of time, you will get your compensation and find out there is nothing that comes in. Even if the inspectors from the Department of Labor went to a workplace, do inspection, make reports, they will say they have submitted the report to the compensation office in Pretoria, and the office in Pretoria, if you phone them, they will say we haven't received anything here. Really, that makes the department to be looked as if it exists for nothing. As a result, the challenge and criticism most of the time goes to the Minister of the Department of Labor. I thought it was important, Chair, for me to start with that comment. But I think one clarity that I'm seeking, Chair, is to when a worker has injured, and then where he or she is disabled, because most of the time you'll find that the level of disability is not permanent. It's a temporary disabled, which can be attended to in the process, even if that person can be discharged by the institution that was taken care of. Now, I heard in your presentation saying that you face difficulties where employers do not necessarily take workers who have suffered injuries, they were not taken back, and there's nothing that you can do, if I understood you correctly. Now, what is Schedule 8 of the Labor Relations Act? Why then you don't use Schedule 8 of the Labor Relations Act? Because there's a section there that deals with people who have been injured during a working environment. That's one question, sir. The second one, which I think is the last one, in your presentation you indicated that there were offices that were looking after compensation in the former CBDC state. And it's like even now you are still struggling to bring the work that is done in the former CBVC state to be in line with the national approach in the compensation plan in Pretoria. What causes this? Really, we can't, after, 15 years of democracy, find that there are still offices of the Department of Labor, in particular in this critical area of compensation, that are still stand alone in the former Transkei, former society. What has been causing this all along? Thank you.
Any other question? Another below.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, before I ask my questions, I would like just to make a comment. Without labouring what the previous speaker already has said, thank you to the Commissioner, Ms. Mkonto. I think your report was, or rather your presentation, was very self-explanatory. However, there's a couple of things that are really of great concern. And at the same time, I need to say to you that I really pity the situation that the department is in right now, but there's a couple of things that one needs to find out. Chairperson, one of the things that I would like to find out from the Commissioner is the department has beefed up 70% of the workforce, the employees. But despite that, the challenges are still enormous. At what stage will the department be able to address these challenges in totality? I'm mindful of the fact that you did mention that by next year, March, 100% of the employees would be you'll be full-staffed, for the lack of a better word. The second question is, the Auditor General's report, 2007/8, the disclaimer. My question is, are we looking at another disclaimer for the next financial year in view of the situation as is? My third question, the PMS system, performance management system. What methodology does the department use in order to evaluate the people presently? Or should I surmise that they used a carte blanche approach? I do have other questions for Chairperson, but I will stop there for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I'll just ask a few questions as well, because most of the questions have been asked already. They are all particularly protesting from ANC. It's unfortunate that the document is not numbered, but under highlights 2008 and 2009, the bullet that talks about 70% of senior executive management. I'm not sure as to whether the organogram that we saw yesterday is part of the 70% or the whole of 70%. If it is only part, can we get a full organogram, which is broken down in terms of gender and race, so we can see if transformation is taking place or not. And under priorities, which I take as objective, there are no time frames, so it will make it difficult for us to do oversight. Thank you.
Another thing, only.
Thank you, Chairperson. You're learning our names very quickly. I have three questions. The first one is, how are we going to deal with that $400 million that is not being dispersed to people who are, by the sounds of things, entitled to it? Is it going to accumulate? How are we going to find these people? Are we going to pay the money out to them? What happens now? Secondly, I've forgotten one of my points, but I'll just make two in that case. The second one that I want to make is that a lot of the problems that we're having are ongoing in the compensation fund, and that's frustrating. We might be new in this committee, but we certainly, through reading reports, through talking to people who were previously on this committee and so on, are aware that the same problems are cropping up year after year after year, and we don't seem to be making a lot of progress. The computer system was a problem a year ago. Now it's a problem again. Many of these other things, as my colleague over there from the ANC, whose name I just can't remember for a minute, I'll get it in a week or so. saying, you know, these problems, 15 years of democracy and we've got this problem hanging around. So those are my two questions. The first one is, what are we going to do about the $400 million that is accumulated? That should have been paid out to people and we can't find them. And secondly, the problem with the within the department seems to be repeated year after year after year. Are we making any progress? Because in the reports it doesn't look like it. It looks like the same problems that were tabled as problems 12 months ago are tabled again, like these problems with the computer system, like the incorporation of the TDVC space, like the access problems that people are having, the time delays, the length of days that it takes to process one application compared with other institutions. These are things that are not new problems. They're things that have been around for quite some time, and I'm wondering, are we making any progress? Thank you. The first two.
Later this day, just to allow the department to respond to these questions, then we'll take a second round. What we're doing, Commissioner Pisa, the staff, we started with the test report. So I test report compensation fund. So we are engaging on these two questions. Remember, the staff ask questions, so they'll respond. Thank you. Over to you, members of the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. Maybe the first question that I should immediately start up with is the number of board members. In terms of the representation of the board, it consists of 15 members, one from the REN Mutual Assurance, representing the mining interest. The other one comes from construction FEMA, which is FEMA, Federated Employers Mutual Assurance. Two from Health Professional Council, three from BUSA, one from the Department of Health, and one official comes from the Department of Labor, OHS Division, which is supposed to be Chief Inspector. One from the National Treasury, representing government. Three members from the trade union COSATU, one from FEDUSA and one from NACTU. So those are representatives of the board of the compensation fund. With respect to the exemption of municipalities, as I've indicated earlier on, that municipalities are the second tier of government, the third tier of government, and they predominantly receive their funding from the state. And I think that is one of the main reasons that we extend this privilege to them for exemption. However, that exemption is granted on application and is considered in the event where the commissioner is of the view that the exemption is not necessary, that municipality might not be able to handle. We deny them that exemption and then the municipality must contribute to the compensation fund and we take responsibility. I must also indicate that in terms of the legislation, even if we're given them exemption, if they are unable to meet the obligation in terms of the legislation, the compensation fund is liable to take over responsibility. That is why from time to time we have to get those certificates from them of guarantee to indicate that they have sufficient funds and they will be able to meet their obligation. So that's how we manage that relationship. With regard to disability, I think I was upfront in admitting that this is one area where we're lacking. And I think one of the reasons why I will attribute this is that if you operate from a crisis mode, you will not be able to manage better. You will forever be in a crisis cycle. But if you try to solve one problem, another one will be cropping up. The biggest challenge you have now is paying accounts of doctors, those who treat our patients, because of the volumes that we're having. So that itself, I think, is denying us the opportunity to focus on other responsibilities that the fund has. One other aspect that you have indicated, I remember, was the issue of those injured people who are not able to be accommodated back into employment. The current legislation, as it stands, the compensation fund does not give the commissioner nor any official the power to force the employer to take the worker back. And as I said, because we're in a crisis mode, we are forever trying to pay accounts. We have forgotten about the workers out there, those who have fallen out of the system. And I think the attempt to come up with a policy review for early return, which is what we have learned from other countries, is that it does give assistance in ensuring that an employer takes responsibility for the worker that has got injured in terms of the various legislation. For example, the Honorable Member has mentioned the Labor Relations Act. We also have the Employment Equity Act, which deals with, in it, it indicates that the employer must create reasonable accommodation, but it does not force the employer. So the employer must attempt or desire to create that reasonable accommodation. We do have technical assistance guides which we give employers to use to assist, but we are not enforcing, it's not enforceable in terms of the law. You can't force the employer. So these are some of the things that we are looking at. Where the employer under reasonable circumstances is not able to take back injured worker, I think the Department of Labor is supposed to intervene either through training and rehabilitation for that worker to be redeployed elsewhere, either into self-employment or into sheltered employment factories. So those are some of the things that are currently lacking in our legislation. And the early return program is designed to try to address that gap, such that the government and the employer have joint responsibility to ensure that whoever gets injured is assured that if they are rehabilitated, they should either go back to a previous employment or find something else reasonable for them to live. I think that is a policy program that we will bring to Parliament once we finalize our consultation and design. The issue of ban on assistive device, I think in the picture that I've given there, I think I did indicate that the graph that gives the indication of the percentage that we pay to authorities, and I did indicate that that is the general figure, but if I will have to go back, Honorable Member, and provide you with the correct detail of how much money we spend on assistive devices. You also indicated the issue of people spending a long time in hospitals. I think we want to thank members of Parliament, because I think this matter was also brought to my attention during the course of last year at the Hotchkiss Hospital, where we found that there were patients who had been there for 9 months lying on bed because the commissioner was unable to approve assistive devices. And when we did a cost comparison, we found that indeed the commissioner was able to pay first the hospital for the services that it was rendering for that 9 months, which were in excess of over 400,000 rand. And the device that could have been granted earlier would have cost the commissioner around 25,000 rand. So we found that it's a wasteful expenditure which we could have avoided, and it's something that we are looking at, and I've instructed that we should use as much as we can additional service of private providers so that we can be able to approve this device in time. But just to give you the background is that the compensation fund in itself has a culture of not trusting the service providers. So that is why each and every application is scrutinized to the last letter. And I think that's not helpful because it contributes to the delays that we have. So we are looking at ways in which we could fast-track this thing to pay fast. But in the event where a doctor is cheating us, then the system will catch up with him and they'll deal with him. But to delay approving things because you want to make yourself assured that that person needs a device, I think it's not helpful. We also want to learn from other agencies where I've learned that they make use of what we call the help of either nurses on the ground there to go in and see the patients in the hospitals, or they call them case managers. I think that also will, once we embrace the issue of having case managers across the country, they will be able to go to the hospitals or to anywhere to see the patients so that we can be able to approve these things on time. But at the present moment, everything is done by one or two individuals in Pretoria. In the case of chronic treatment, I think there's provision for that. We do have workers who are chronic and who continue to get chronic medication until the demise. So that provision is there in the Act. With regard to the questions raised by Honorable Nyagemba, I think I'll look at Schedule 8. I must admit that I was not aware of that. I'll have to go back and re-look at Schedule 8 so that we can see how best we could assist here. But I'm quite aware that a lot of workers who I've met should be back at work, but are not back because the employer says, I don't have anything to offer you because you can't do what you used to do. So this is something that we may need to look into. The TBVC challenge that I've indicated is that we had an organogram that was there prior to the TBVC integrated into this fund. Even after they were integrated, the organization did not transform itself to take care of the overall increased responsibility that it has over and above the old South Africa responsibility. We had the same number of people who were in the old South African Compensation Fund doing work, because it was them taking over those who were coming from the TBVC. Then those had nothing to say but to be deployed where they wanted to. So that is something that has created the problem. We had people, for example, who was a former commissioner who had no background in finance, managing finance. So these are some of the problems that I had to deal with to try to remove those people. They were not adding value, but they were put there to rot until pension, probably. But these are some of the problems that we've inherited that we are trying to address. And I think I must also indicate that probably the reason why we could not pick up some of these problems is because the tendency in government is that we look at audit reports. If the audit report looks good, we assume that the organization is healthy. And we overlook the operational aspect of that organization. I think this has been a problem in this organization, in that the audit did not indicate that this animal was in distress. But I think now we are indicating, I think that's why the minister asked me to move in there so that we can try to go and correct the things. So we doing our best to correct it. It's difficult, but I think we have a plan in place to address these challenges. With regards to the organogram that was presented yesterday by the acting director general, I must indicate that that was the organogram for the department. The faces that might be there is the faces of the senior management of the Department of Labor, which includes the commissioners of the two funds. But the organogram of the funds is a separate organogram, and as I've indicated to you, before the minister approved the structure last year, August, the structure only provided for one commissioner, with one manager of finance, assisted by one executive manager assisted by one manager, and also one claims manager, executive manager assisted by two managers, which in my view was insufficient for the organization of this magnitude. So that's why we had to ask the minister to approve an interim structure so that we can be able to address a number of problem areas which the Auditor General has identified, and also to beef up the medical area where we have to pay medical accounts. I must indicate that we are hoping that the audit report will be better, because indeed we did address some of the issues that he has raised last year, but that the final decision or opinion still rests with the Auditor General. For example, in the area of revenue, those credit balances are still there because I cannot write off amounts that are not substantiated, because in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, I can go to prison. So, in fear of going to prison, I have requested management to tabulate and indicate where we need to do write-offs, what is the reason for the write-off, such that if the Auditor General does raise it and I'm asked to account for it, I can be able to account. So we're still having a challenge in that area. And as I've indicated to you, the area of assessments and debtors, one of the problems that we have found out is that most of the old employees were working in this environment, doing these assessments, have taken what we call voluntary retrenchment packages, and they've opened up their own practices now, consulting practices, and they're going back to employers to say, we can save you money, we know the system, we know how it operates. Now we have a flooding of applications to revise assessments, and this is preoccupying our staff in trying to revise and do these things, and because the law allows for that, we can't ignore these applications. We have to attend to them. And in some instances, it also contributes to corruption because they collude with their former colleagues who are still in the civil service to make these changes and revisions. And that is why I've indicated earlier in my presentation that to address this particular matter, I've got to change the model of assessment. So use a purely insurance model, which you have no opportunity to change numbers from time to time as and when you feel like. So the consultant's job will disappear if we employ the new model. So we hope that we'll put peace to that process. And also it will assist us to do away with rebates. Because what we find also is that a lot of employers are not reporting accidents because the system allows them to claim back some money which they've contributed in the past if they have not had accidents. So the new model will do away with rebates, and also it will do away with revisions. It will be purely an insurance model that says, if you haven't reported accidents, we'll deem you to have been behaving. You'll get the benefit of reduced premiums. But if we do find that you are hiding something, then the penalties will be increased. So it will be on that basis. With regards to performance management, we do have a government performance management system which calls for two forms of evaluation. It's mid-term evaluation and annual evaluation. Mid-term evaluation is when you, after 6 months, you call your subordinate and then you say, let's look at your performance in the last 6 months and see whether you've done well or not. And again, the last evaluation is done at the end of the 12th month. So our proposal in our three-year plan is to say we need to put in systems in place so that we can have a continuous evaluation, so that you don't have to make evaluation an event. It becomes a daily thing, because somebody can actually see for himself if he's heading for a poor performance. So it doesn't have to be an event, because at the present moment, we have endless disputes and grievances. Because an incumbent will say that, I know I did well, my supervisor does not like me. But if you put a system in place and it's computerized, you eliminate all those disputes. Because then you show him evidence to say that, look, you're supposed to perform according to the standard. Proof is here that you didn't perform, so it will eliminate all those things. We will indeed make provision for the full organogram to be submitted. We do have it. I will also give in the time frame for the new priorities, but what we gave you are the full priorities for the 3 years, but we do have the 1 year priorities, which I'll give the ones for for 9 and 10. We'll make that submission to the committee. With regard to the 400 million, I have indicated that my experience in the other world, which was the UIF, when we did away with checks, is that most of them were falling off the postal van. We'll post them, but they will never reach the beneficiary. So my sense here, in that it's two years now, and no one is showing up. Probably those recipients who used to receive them are afraid to come forward, because then they may have to account for the previous checks that they were collecting in the past. So that's my innocent suspicion, because I believe if you are entitled to something, you'll make noise. But for a mere fact that nobody's coming forward, and some of it was going to government hospitals, so I'm wondering whether those government hospitals don't need this money. So it's something that our risk management unit is probing to find out if indeed it was fraud, then we'll be able to account for it. But at the moment, we have not made much headway on this area. But at least we are happy that we have saved the state money, if indeed this is a saving. We should have gone to wrong people. Indeed, yes, the problem that I'm putting forward before you are not new. If you read the annual reports of the past, you pick up that these problems are there. There are three things that I believe that needs to be done to get this thing in place, and I think the minister is fully behind us in getting that. One was to get an appropriate structure for the organization, get an understanding of what is the right structure for compensation fund. But this was one of the largest medical aid in South Africa. There's no medical aid scheme bigger than this. We cater for over 11 million workers, and all of the other medical aid, if they do have any membership, I think the largest, second largest is GEMS, which is over 1.1 million people. So the rest are below that number, but their systems are far ahead of the compensation fund. So you need systems. We can't run away from the fact that technology is an enabler. We need to put proper systems. And the problem was sitting with a company called Siemens that we have a relationship with for 10 years. And unfortunately, it's not coming to the table. It's a problem I think the minister has pronounced on it a number of times. We are now at a stage of reviewing the contractual relationship. It's across the Department of Labor, this contractual relationship with Siemens, not only for the compensation fund. But if we can get appropriate medical aid solutions for the fund, we'll be able to speed up the payment of accounts. And then we can spend much time focusing on those workers to say, are they getting proper treatment? Are they rehabilitated adequately? Are they actually going to work? But at the moment, we won't have that time, because we're answering phones every day. When am I getting my money? We're getting litigation from lawyers. My client wants you to pay. So this is the type of environment in which we are. And I think, lastly, we need to change the way we operate, as I've said earlier on. That we mustn't suspect that every doctor out there is a thief. They are providing a national service, and I think they must be rewarded for the service that they are performing. So that's such a change that needs to happen in that institution. And I think systems will help us cut down a lot of time. I believe these systems will be able to move. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Further questions on this of clarification?
Chairperson, let me just a comment based on this debate.
And your name and your part until they know you.
Ah, okay. Excuse me, Chair.
Sure.
Andrew Lowe from the DA.
Yes.
Chairperson, when I browse through these documents, surely the compensation fund also resides under the Department of Labor. And obviously there are lessons to be learned. There are good practices to be learned. Looking at the unemployment fund, there was some recommendations made, and for that reason, I'm making a statement that surely they recite under the same umbrella. For instance, and I will mention a few, they went and they made some roadshows, they involved stakeholders, they did branding, and so we can carry on. Now, I fail to comprehend why the compensation fund cannot adopt things that are workable. That's my comment, Chairperson.
You want them to answer your comment?
Maybe they can comment on your comment. Can we keep that comment? Can comment on it? Any other question? Another from Nyagemba.
Thanks. I'm Eric Nyagemba from the ANC. It's former trade union. I think this question will also go to UIF in relation to contributions towards the fund. My understanding is that contributions for compensation or either UIF, there's a code or a reference number or whatever name you give to it, that is given to a particular company. So obviously that comes from the department, it's not the company that creates that number. Now, when you receive a return by the end of April, you will identify by the reference number that this is company A. And when you don't receive by the end of May, I mean, does your system not tell you that this company which will receive contributions in the end of April has not, I mean, paid us by the end of May? I mean, this whole system and whole problem with cement, does it affect you to an extent where you cannot pick up somebody who has not paid, who are supposed to be paying you? I mean,
it doesn't make sense to me, Madam Chair. Thanks.
No thanks, Chair. So pardon us for the confusion that was caused. And if we repeat what the... Sorry. My name is Willie Madisha from Colton. You'll pardon us if what you are raising has been responded to because of our not being here. I think they can see that. We'll look into the minutes. If we were here when it started, we would have commended them for the openness and the very good work that they've done in presenting the whole thing. I think they've been open. They've done a good job. However, the issue is the implementation. That's a problem, really. From the information that they gave us, we would have said that apart from identifying the problems which are there, let's see the actual implementation permeating the entire system. Secondly, we would have pointed out that the issue of timelines have got to be looked into because the injured and those with occupational diseases are not paid in time, and I think you have pointed that out. And from our side, we would again have proposed that should these timelines not be followed, then the people who become sick, who have their limbs cut, etc., the benefits should be paid with interest. that has got to be looked into through my leaders. So that there must be timelines. If they are overlooked, if people are not paid in time, then we need to look into the issue of interest. Why? Because people, of course, remember, they spend their monies, monies which they do not have. They pay their monies through the entire process of going to doctors, hospitals, etc. These are poor people, some of whom, afford or they get paid less than 2,000 rand a month. And if they've got to have their monies used through the particular processes, then we have a very serious problem. The second thing that we would have raised that we've been here is this issue of lack of systems that says and remind back the claimant that we need to look into that. That we don't simply say that we are lacking in systems. We need to put this in place and find a way of reminding the claimant. Remember, these are again people who, of course, most of them are not literate enough. And some of them, the majority of course, do not even know that this kind of benefit, exists. So we need to find a way of tracing them. I know it's difficult, but let's find a way of tracing them and ensuring that the claimants are reminded of this kind of processes for them really to access service. Three is the issue, and that's where some of us are not happy. There are instances where some claims were made 17 years ago, and this, of course, we have gone into research, we have that information, that some claims were made 17 years ago, and these particular claims have not been paid. This has got to be attended to as a matter of urgency. Again, it takes me back to the point that most of our people, the workers, are not literate enough. Some of them actually even fear to come forward to say, we have a problem here. And that is a very serious problem. Can we look into that particular point? And therefore to say, when we sit and meet with the fund next time, we, of course, will be happy to hear them say, we have gone through the particular route. This is what we have been able to achieve. Basically, to report to us. I mean, we won't be happy, gentlemen, ladies, to hear again that there are these problems. We are still looking into them. We need to hear through your chair them saying that which we raised in the beginning of the year, this is what we've been able to achieve, and we have been able to move forward. Now, the one thing that we'll raise here is that for us to attain all this, then it takes us back to the issue of funding. Of course, this comes back to us here at the budget. What is it that has got to be done to ensure that the whole process is looked into. But again, to go back to the funds, to say, what is it that you have put aside as funding to make sure that all these things that you have raised here and all these recommendations that are being made are just done. So we hope that you'll be able to both respond and basically look into that. And lastly, Chair, the issue of the employers. How do we make sure that they are forced to contribute? Because very many of them are not doing that. Very many of these people, the employers, are the people who are not registered as employers. These are just people who are there. And we know, for example, it was, like I said yesterday, you have people who are employers who are not known. That is why you have a situation where people have just been killed in the mines. And these people are employed by employers who are not known altogether. Can we deal with that as well? So if they can say to us, this is what we are doing to make sure that indeed we are able to follow up these people, that can assist.
Thank you. Any further comments and questions on the
from the DA, just one last one. The two funds that are separate, the one for Mines and the other one, if a member there claims and their claim is rejected or they're, you know, not helped, is there an appeal mechanism or are those independent funds empowered legally to refuse if they feel that a particular claim is not valid? Is there an appeal system to the Compensation Fund or the Department of Labor or what? Is it just dead? Is that particular fund? Because it sounds like they're two private entities, not two government entities. And in that case, if a private entity in the mining sector says to a particular guy who's lost his leg underground, no, sorry, we're not going to pay you, how can he appeal that? Can he appeal that? Is there a process? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Maybe let me start with the last one. I think, as I've said earlier on, that the overall responsibility still remains with the compensation fund. In the event where the two mutuals have deemed that they've dealt with a claim, and the person indeed feels that he's not satisfied, he can still approach us to intervene and assist. As I've indicated, these funds were created a long time ago, and they are private funds, as you said, owned by employers, but they only operate on license from us. I think the indication I can say that why we're not learning from the best practice of the other sister organization. I think this, we're trying our best to do that. But as I've indicated, that unfortunately, if you're in a firefighting mode, you don't even see the opportunities that are passing you next door. I think that's the challenge that we have. They've sorted out their challenges. They can now begin to look at best practice. What is it that they can do better to improve? We have a housing fire, so we're killing fires at the moment, and I think, as I said earlier on, we have a plan. We set the 3-year plan. Our first focus was to resource the finance area to deal with the AG concern, but we need to deal with those ones. So we have resourced the finance division. As I've indicated also in my earlier presentation, we have given Siemens the blueprint, the new IT blueprint, the new IT system we want them to develop for us, to move away from paper. That is another thing that we are working on. The third area that we're going to focus on is claims management, especially the payment of medical accounts, because that's where a lot of noise is coming from, because those claimants have voice. They're with the media around, unlike the owner workers who don't have that voice. So we believe that we need to kill that thing also, so that we can begin to focus on workers. We can begin to look at campaigns that we can run. But at the moment, we are inundated. We've got lawyers knocking at the door every day wanting to litigate. So I have to deal with them, try to resolve these things. But I believe they will come to an end. We won't be saying these things every day when we come here. I think on the reference numbers of employers, and I think the honourable member said a very important point. The numbers, the reference number used by the UIF and the reference number used by the Compensation Fund, and the reference number used by the National Skills Fund is different. But we're in the same department. So that's something that we need to address. Because if you have one employer, why should that employer use this number to communicate with the Commissioner for Compensation, that number for UIF and that number for National Skills Fund? So it's an IT problem that we need to begin to address. I think the issue of follow-ups, we are busy addressing it here. I have already issued a tender for the debt collector to identify those employers who are not coming to the table so that we can collect the money. But we also believe that the debt collector will also assist us in identifying the real amount owing to us, because as I indicated, our assessment system is found wanting. So once we go out there and start demanding money, the real truth and situation will emerge, and we'll be able to correct our books and have the right amount of money in our books. So those are the processes that we are also having in place to address collection.
Any more input on this issue of compensation?
Question on the last issue that debt collectors are going to be engaged. You know, we have an experience from one of the municipalities whereby debt collectors collected 3 million and they paid 4 million. So, how would you deal with such situations that you got against, that you don't have people collecting your debt and only to pay more than what is collected?
Just a quick one. Contact detail. When we have people who approach us in our constituencies and say, I haven't got my compensation, do you have an email address or name of a person or something we can send it to, or perhaps the department can give it to us? Because as new members, you know, the people come rushing up to us. You know what it's like the first month, everybody rushes your door with all their complaints, and we don't know who to pass it on to.
Members, do you have more questions? Maybe I can ask my question. I don't know where to start. I don't even know whether I should ask questions. You know, I don't believe. I don't believe what I've said today about this fund. But then it answers all the questions that we meet with outside when people are complaining about the Department of Labor. I also appreciate the fact that you are honest with us and told us what has been happening. You don't have proper systems. You don't have follow-up. Your inspectors have no coordination with your department. It's clear that nobody knows. For me, it's just a person. If an inspector goes out, there is no accountability in everything that you're doing. And that is a problem. The first question, these people who are from the TPD states that are kept there, that are not adding value to the department, are ready to claim the pension when the time comes. Why are they kept there? You said it yourself, they are there, they're not adding any value. They are waiting for the time. When the time is right, they'll take their pensions and leave. Why is it like that? For years. Who is not... Who should account... Your inspectors should be going around and doing all this, collecting all this information and reporting to the department. You have people that they account to the department. Who is at fault in this question of coordination? Who should take blame at the end of the day? Because we can't go on and say it's, you know, because it's a crisis situation, and therefore, whenever you solve this one, the other crises just crop up.
But at the end of the day, you have people who are being paid by the department to do this specific, perform the specific task. So who are those people? Because those people should be taking responsibility. It can't be just we understand all this chaos in the department, but certain people should be accounting. Why are they not accounting? The amount of 400 million that is there, that is not claimed. You mentioned that some service providers claim more than once. How is that possible? Before you pay these service providers, what is that you are look? What are the guidelines for you to pay a service provider? What is the relationship between your service providers and the patients and the department? Why is it difficult for the department to detect that? I know you have detected, but why is it possible that these people can say? Because it means that if they do it, there are certain instances where you are unable to detect. Now, what criteria do you use to pay? The guidelines that you follow to pay? Are you sure that the money that you have paid, you have huge amounts here that you have paid 2006, 2007, 2008. Can you tell this committee that you are 100% sure where you are, that the amounts that you have paid out, you paid the correct amount to the right people for the right job performed? Your low, in your slide, the low light, you talked about people, you said that people must come to Pretoria to be able to get compensation. They can't get it anywhere except in Pretoria. If I'm quoting you right, there's something of that sort that you said. I might not be saying the right thing, but I'm referring to something that you said. It has to be paid in Pretoria. Then what happens to people who are not able to go to Pretoria? People who are in the rural areas, or people who can't go to Pretoria because they may not be able to have a place to sleep, or unable to get to that Pretoria for that matter. What happens to those people, and what happens to that money? The challenge of debtors and creditors. You are in the process of cleaning up. That's the word that you use. Tell us this process, and when is it going to? When are you going to be done with this? The deadline for this? Do you have deadlines? I've got a number of questions. You see, maybe in all these things, you have promised that there's something that you are doing. After 15 years, you are, you know, working towards putting the right systems in place in all these areas that you are unable to account or unable to, you know, point at challenges, at problems, or how to get into problems. When are we going to say this problem is over? Because there should be a time when the department is saying the problem is over. It can't go on. I mean, if we, as this committee, the new committee, will allow you to present in the next term to the committee the same problem that you are presenting, would have not been done, it has not done our work. Now you must tell us, when are you going to put all these systems into place in that department? What is that? What is your plan? When are you coming with the right plan that is going to do away with this problem? You also mentioned that the appropriate structure for the compensation fund is underway. Deadline, when underway, till when? When are you going to be done with it? I think I should stop there.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me first give you the question that was asked by Honorable Member Ms. Sotetti on the debt collector. The principle that we have used is that you pay for what we pay you once we have collected. So we don't pay if you have collected. We are at a stage of appointing, I'm not so sure whether it's any. So probably by next week Wednesday, they will use the chairperson of the Bid Adjudication Committee that is also a new appointed executive manager finance. So he's the chairperson of that committee that adjudicates on bid. So we're hoping that by next week we'll have these collectors in place. So I think the question that you have asked, Madam Chairperson, is a proper question. When will these things come to an end? We have given the minister a 3-year plan, ending March 2012. We believe that by the end of March 2012, we will not be coming here saying the same stories. But as you know, that you will not achieve these things overnight. It's a process. A lot of these things need systems to be in place, and we are building blocks. As I said, the first building blocks was to identify the right resources in terms of people that you need, and that phase we're hoping to finish it end of March next year. That's the agreement that we've had with the acting director general. He's approved that we appoint a service provider to assist us in right sizing the organization. So we hope that by March next year, that one will be one achievement that we'll be able to talk about. The contact details, I think what we'll do, we'll make them available to the secretary, to the committee, of the critical people you can get in touch with in the fund. What we're basically indicating was to say that when these people were absorbed, it didn't mean that they didn't have a role to play. In their previous dispensation, they were playing different roles. And when you merge organizations, you tend to get those problems of the organization that is taking over others. They tend to want to keep other people away. So what do we speak with? We're, for example, sitting with a situation where the former commissioner who was doing revenue collection, and he did not have appropriate skills. So we had to relook at where can we redeploy him, because what we felt was he was not adding value to the organization because he's doing the job that he does not understand. So we are re-looking at the people and redeploying them to appropriate places in organizations. But we can then appoint people who are trained in finances to come and manage finances. I think that's the
the exercise that you are doing. And we have good cooperation from them, and then I think we are moving smoothly there. With regard to the inspection, I think it's an old problem that if you do not have a central mechanism to monitor, it is difficult for an organization to be effective. I'll just give a good example. An inspector might go to a place and he may realize that this place is highly risky. He will issue an order to say to the employer, fix this thing within 60 days. But that information will not reach the commissioner this side, because at the end of the day, that risk is going to be borne by the commissioner. People are going to be injured if it's not fixed, and we have to pay. We'll have to pay money, or to pay compensation and all that. But if we had a central system where you could be able to see the reports of inspections that have gone on to say these places are high risk, and then also we could devise our own strategies to up the premium so that those employers pay more so that they can fix the place. Or alternatively, if we are receiving accident reports from different employers and the inspection is not able to see those reports we are receiving, they will not be able to know which places to go to go and sort out the problem, because we are not integrated. The department has its own systems, compensation fund has its own systems. And the whole idea when we went into this triple P with Siemens was to try to get an integrated IT solution so that every person can see what's happening everywhere. And in fact, I can be able to see that the commissioner is receiving so many accident reports, for example, from construction industry. Then the chief inspector can organize his inspectors, go to construction and sort out the problem. But because we don't have that, our systems are not talking to each other. That is a problem, Madam Chairperson. It's a system, more of a systems problem that we haven't managed to address. I know the chief inspector is working on a new case management system, and inspection enforcement case management system. Hopefully, if we integrate with that one, we'll be able to assist each other in ensuring that we manage the workplace better from a safety point of view. The money that we are saying they're not claiming, our risk unit is evaluating, and as I've indicated, that they do go to some of those employers with details to service providers to say, are we owing you money? Why are you not collecting it? So, some have come forward, they've got their money. Some haven't come forward. But my suspicion is that on the ordinary employees, it could be a situation whereby the last address where this check was to go to the employer, and that worker might no longer be there. So if you go there looking for Mkonto, you may find that Mkonto is not there, or maybe that company is no longer there. So these are some of the challenges. The last address that is on our system may no longer be relevant today. So these are some of the challenges that are being experienced. And we assume that there could be also those who are not willing to come forward for obvious reasons. But we don't know the exact number and the exact amount. But what we are seeing is that there is money that people are not coming forward to collect. And the AGS, as Ray has seen it in his 07-08 report. In the presentation, we indicated that there are, when we spoke about number of payments, where we say one service provider might claim more than once. For example, an injured worker can come today and get treated, and then a week later he may have to come for a second opinion or for a third opinion. So each and every time an injured worker goes for checkup or for this and that at the hospital, they get
issued with a new invoice. We get a new invoice for that service that was provided. So you find that for one person, the doctor can claim more than 10 times because he has seen this person more than once. For every time they go there for checkup or treatment, the commission has to pay. It's provided for in the law. We do have a situation where we have duplicate payments, where a doctor has claimed for the same service twice. We have developed a system that checks on duplicate payments, where we see that this claim was paid for. So the system will indicate to the official that, look, this claim was paid for. Isn't this a duplicate? Check it. So we eliminate those duplicates by that. And some of the reasons why sometimes we have duplicate payments, I think it's because of the delay in paying. Some organizations, for example, they've got their system. If I've sent you an invoice and I've not received money in 30 days, they issue another invoice. So we find that we're getting two or three invoices for the same service because we didn't pay in time. But the system does pick them up and we avoid duplicating. But there could be instances, I cannot say with certainty, that we don't have situations where we didn't duplicate payment. I think the auditors in their job, they do sometimes show us to say, look, we're just paying this payment. But I do not have the facts to say 100% for sure I can guarantee. I cannot guarantee that that is possible. At this point in time, I cannot give that guarantee. But we do have controls in place to monitor that. With regards to who happened, people who are not in Pretoria. What we do at the moment is that if somebody is away from Pretoria, we do request them to send us their banking details. And then once we receive their banking details, we put them on the system and we put the money into their bank account. I do know, Madam Chairperson, that there are problems. For example, with regard to the UIF, the earlier presented by the commissioner, he did indicate that he is decentralized to most provinces, which means the payments are done at that point. So that is one of the exercises we have embarked upon now. I've indicated that, for example, in PE, we started there 2 years back, and we have learned from it, and we are now, as of last week, met with the medical providers in Polokwane, and we have agreed with them that by the 25th of June, we should be able to have a similar facility that we have in PE in Polokwane. And we hope that if we can do it in Polokwane this time, it will allow us to do it in every province, such that by the end of March next year, we can at least have presence in almost all provinces to begin to do this adjudication of accounts everywhere. But it requires technology to be there, and we also need to appoint people and put them there. So we are moving in that direction. The deadlines for letters with credit balances, I can send the information, because that is an area that is a different executive manager who's working on, and in his performance agreement, we do have plans as to when are they hoping to finish this thing. I can make that information also available as to what is the deadline there. The issue of the structure also, we are hoping that by the end of March, with a system of service provider, we should be able to have an ideal structure for the organization. I must indicate that despite all the challenges that we have highlighted, I think there are good things that we are doing. The fact that we are still able to pay up to 2.2 billion a year to so many workers and service providers, it does indicate that there is work that is being done. However, it is not done to the satisfaction and expectation of the nation. And I think this is what we are saying, that we cannot allow this situation to continue. We have to do something fast. And
this is what we are putting in our 3-year plan to say our priorities for next year, to make sure that these things are not the story that we come and tell you next year. We should be able to come and tell you progress on some of the things that we have highlighted.
Thank you. I hope we're done with this report. Okay. Just a small I'm provoked by your input section. You know, one is tempted to ask if there are managers in the department who got performance bonuses, and if yes, what informed it? And those who were promoted as well, what informed the promotion if there are no assistants in place? And I think in every organization, the base is a monthly report, even if you don't have systems, as to the objectives that are set for the manager and if those objectives were achieved.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Maybe the clarity may be whether it is directed at the CF or in the broader department. The broader department.
People who are responsible for accountability, that is senior management in general.
No, among the senior members of the department, there were no bonuses awarded. In fact, this process, because of the qualifications that we received, the minister was very clear about this matter. But I think in terms of the CF, one thing that the commissioner did not mention is that he inherited the situation. The managers that were there were all dismissed the minute he got in there because of the problems that he is outlining. And what delayed part of the fixing of the problem was the hearings and the normal contestation and the appeals and so on. And that meant that he could not fill the vacancies that arose after their suspension and the subsequent dismissal. And that process has just been completed recently, which resulted in him being in the position to appoint new staff to assist in dealing with those problems. Because the entire management team, starting from the commissioner responsible for this fund, were dismissed precisely because of the problems that Mr. Mkonto was outlining. Maybe that is the context that was not outlined. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. First, one question. Who decides how much should be given to the worker for compensation? The amount. What criteria do you use to give out those amounts of money?
Do you want to respond to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The determination of compensation to an individual is based on their earnings at the time of the reporting of either the disease or the injury. And it's a calculation that's based on a formula, such an administrative application. If you are impaired, a certain percentage they multiply that by the salary that you got, and the salary will include a few things, including allowances that made up a huge chunk of your salary for the period of 12 months, and that constitutes your compensation. If you get a compensation percentage of a 30 and less, you will get money in your hand immediately. If you get a percentage of 31 and more,
you will be given a pension for the rest of your life. Thank you.
Okay. Did you want to say something? Check, sir. In the determination, in the formula, there's been a differentiation of your impairments according to the score that you get depending on how you are assessed. There are people who are impaired and they are given according to that calculation what we call a percentage disablement or a PD of 1, 15, 20, up to 30. There are people who will get that. And then those, when that 30% is multiplied by their salary and everything, it becomes a lump sum. There will be people who will get 31, they'll get 55, they'll get 70, it becomes a pension. That is a distinction. But the cutoff is at 30 and below and 31 and above. Okay. I have a problem again. There's a meeting that we must have. We're supposed to start at 5 o'clock. I'll allow you one or two questions so that we can go to the other reports. The next report, and those reports must be finished within 20 minutes, unfortunately, the second report. Because what we can do as a committee, definitely after this report, we will have our own recommendations. We hear that they have plans and plans to 2021, but definitely in their plans they've got long-term, short-term, at least I'm sure annually, there should be something that we are seeing a progress towards the final target that is set. So this is what you want when you come back. In fact, there would be some recommendations that you will send to the department after having discussed what is that we need exactly, so that we assist you when you come back. You report on certain things that we want. We don't ask you many questions. You will know what is that we are expecting. Some of the things that you should put emphasis on when you are reporting, more especially on the issues that we are concerned about. We appreciate the fact that you have a plan, but for us, for that plan to succeed, it can be on the end of 3 years. That plan should have started, or it should be starting soon, so that we see as we go along that this 3 year plan that you have put in place will be succeeding. Because you did not have an opportunity, I will allow you to speak. Did you want to say something? Okay.
From ANC. No, it's a clarity from the comment made by the official from the department that is a percentage that you are citing determined by assessment made on the particular India.
Sorry, yeah, I don't remember. I didn't get the bit about dependent on the assessment. Is it on the employee?
Yes.
It is basically based on the earnings. And it's determined on assessment of the employee at that time. It varies, and it depends on the injury or the disease. If you you had been injured, you had been treated maximally for a period of 24 months. At the end of the 24 months, when you were assessed, the doctors will tell us this is how much you are impaired as a result of the injury or as a result of the disease. But if some people, it may happen a bit earlier, depending on whether you lost a limb. And we know limb will not grow back, so if it's 65, you will get 65 invariably. However, other things will go on. You'll get treatment, you'll get physio, you'll get OT. And there are people who have diseases, especially occipital lung diseases, that have a long latency period. When the people are diagnosed at the time, they're almost at the end stage. And what happens is, at the assessment, they are not given a percentage for assessment. They're straightforward given 100% as impairment because the diseases are not curable.
Thank you. Okay, can you quickly go to the two reports that are remaining? I'll give 10 to each report. The second report was on UIF. Any questions? Yeah. Can you start with UIF? Any questions or clarity or comments that you want to make on UIF? Honorable Low.
Okay. Chairperson, I'm mindful of the fact that you've just mentioned that before 20 minutes, then we have to vacate this building, or this room rather. Now, Chair, I think the hot spots, or the most concerning issues, was actually based on compensation fund. And here I'm saying now on behalf of the DA, with regard to the other two portfolios, or the other two units, there's things that one can really live with for now. But when it comes to compensation issues, and Commissioner, I must also say, we have received quite a number of requests from people from different constituencies. When my colleague asked for details here, it's purely because we don't know whom to direct these issues to. Because as we speak, I'm sitting with over 20, 25 issues that is related to compensation only. Because really, Chair, this is a bread and butter issue. Because people out there in the communities, in the constituencies, they are dependent on these monies which they don't get. Now, from our side, Chair, without wasting any more time, I think our hotspot was based on compensation. The others we can revisit at a later stage, but we don't have any comment to make at this stage, especially due to the fact that we've got time constraints. Thank you, Chair.
That's PA. ANC?
ANC has got no time constraints. Thank you very much, Chef. Just one. No, it's the chairperson who got time constraints, not the ANC. Chef. Just one clarity, but I think the question that I raised earlier in relation to how do you identify companies that are skipping in terms of paying the return, because it's happening with UIF, I know. It's not only the compensation fund, because we'll find situations where an employee has been dismissed. Then now that employee went to the Department of Labor to claim, and then he or she is told that when the officials there now try to punch the information that the employee, this employee comes in with, they will only detect that the employer last paid the UIF contributions 5 years ago. I mean, but your presentation was looked like you are excellent, huh? The other one is there are no pages here, but your strategic goal 5, improvement in benefits and coverage, the first bullet point. Can you clarify that? What is it
that you want to move from 8 to 12 months with benefits, because there's a number of benefits. Is your maternity leave, is your adoption, all you know them. What is it that you intend to move from 8 to 12 months? And I think lastly, sir, in these strategic goals, what is also lacking, same as the compensation fund, is time frames. What is it that you want to do by when? Suggestion.
Any more questions?
I think this is the most critical area in the first one. The problem is, for us,
I'll deal with the thing. It's quite a critical that we deal with this. On checking last night, DG, through your chair, we were able to detect that the unemployment rate, the people involved, is about 4.2 million. Yesterday we raised this thing and we're given the rough estimate. And over the past 2 weeks, in the motor industry, the textile, but in the motor industry in particular, 117 people lost their jobs through the movement, from the Eastern Cape to the to KZN, because the employers want to make sure that they afford this, obviously. I'll not go into it more. I suppose you understand that. Now, when things are like that, we learn that there are surpluses, almost 35% surpluses. And that is the problem, really, because you cannot have a situation where people who are supposed to be accessing the UIF are not accessing it when, like I'm saying, they're supposed to be getting this. It's a very serious problem. Now, what is it that is going to be done? I mean, I see what you have put here. What are the plans, really? I mean, over and above this, what I can say from our side is that we are not happy, all together, that we have this kind of a situation. A lot has got to be done. But secondly, the people here lose jobs. Now you give them money, and we are happy, and we have requested for this in the NetLag, etc. We have put this particular point, that it would be good for us to move from at least 8 months up. So we are happy now. After 12 months, we have proposed that. Although we'll be happy if it goes beyond 12 months. Now, that is, welcome. But then, that does not help, because after 12 months, what does the person get? It takes us back. It's a very serious problem. Now, we're speaking here about what you intend doing, ensuring that the people are trained once again. Are you looking into having linkages with CETAS, for example, in making sure that the people are then able to, get employment and are able to go on with their lives? But again, the problem that we raised when we were dealing with the compensation fund is there here, of the tracking of people, whether they are working with, of course, the employers and government, in making sure that we're able to collect and collate this people, and make sure that indeed we're able to save them. But I am saying the most important thing here is, beyond the 12 months, are people able to live after 12 months? You don't wish that people must die after 12 months. Can we come up with something, really, to make sure that they're able to take forward that which they're doing? This it is in the textile industry? Are they able to open their own companies and move forward, etc.? So, Titus, can you take that forward?
Can you respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll deal with the first question from Honorable Eric Ekemba. I think the issue of revenue, you're 100% correct that if you have this number and a person stops to make a payment, you need to determine that, and exactly you are able to do that. That's why you're also correct that when an employee comes, we are able to indicate that there has been no contribution for time it was. We can be able to do that. Our systems are exactly able to do that. But I think what we are doing is not that at that time when we tell the employee that we are busy with collection, we there are some reports that we get. There's a report that we call a liability file that we get on a monthly basis. That would indicate that this employer has registered but did not give us information, but also did not pay. So you can get the gaps. But you also have those who have been making some contributions, they stopped, you are able to determine them. And I think our revenue management processes and debt collections are robust. We are able to receive money in that regard. The biggest challenge that we face is the people outside the system who are not registering, because then you cannot be able to pick them up in the whole situation. In terms of our compliance rate, our compliance rates are not very low. They are around 70%. And we find that most of the people who are not complying are actually the small business people, those who do not have systems. And also in the domestic sector, where people have domestic workers, they register and they just forget. But we actually follow them in terms of making payments. Now, if that employee comes to our office and says, and we tell that you have not been, your employer has not been paying, immediately the inspectors will also do the additional follow-up. Because that's another method that actually helps us to deal with this particular matter. I think the other question is on the strategic goal number 5. We have limits of payment. Now, a person can work for a period of 20 years, but the limit is 4 years. And that is equivalent to 238 days. So what we are doing here is that we need to then increase that particular period from 238 to go to a period of 360, which will be 12 months, because we pay every month for 30 days. That's what we're talking about here. But the benefits that will be affected inevitably will also include, for instance, the sick benefit, because the person is in for a longer period. Because our benefit claims are credit-driven. It depends on the credit that you have on the system. Also, in terms of debt benefits, if a person dies, we're going to pay to the maximum of 238, which is a period of 4 years of the benefits that have been accumulated. But if we say we're increasing the period, it means we're going to pay for more days. So it's actually affecting all other benefits except the maternity benefit. I think the other issue is the issue of the time frames. We have a 3-year strategic plan. What we have here is the highlight. These are the things that we want to do during the current financial year, up till the 31st of March. Obviously, we will have quarterly monitoring reports to indicate how far have we moved from one of the strategic goals to the other. But we want to accomplish all these things by the end of the financial year. The other issue is from Honorable Madisha. With regard to the period, we agree with you that we really wanted to extend benefits for periods exceeding 12 months. However, we need to take into account the sustainability of the fund, because you don't want to increase a benefit to an extent where you cannot afford it was the following year the workers will come to us and say, but we can't pay you. So we need to move very cautiously in that regard, especially when we work with actuaries. They say to us, this is what you can afford up to this point in time. All people who lose their jobs, they get their pay, their payment. We don't have a situation where, like, the 50,000 people and all those that you've mentioned, 117, we have no situation at the fund where people have been turned back and they're not paid. People come and they're paid. We pay 350 million every month. Where the number of people that we pay, the transactions, they are actually about 160,000. On a monthly basis, and in terms of the numbers of people, it's around 50,000 to 60. So we all the time pay people. There are situations, obviously, when people come because of resignation, which, for instance, it will be unlawful for us to pay them. But when people come with retrenchment, we pay them. We have linkages with SITAS when we deal with the training and development of the unemployed. But not only the SITAS, we also work with employer organizations who, for instance, when there's an organization called SEFSA in the steel industry, we talk to them and say, we are training these people, are there vacancies available for them with regard to learnerships, internships, and also permanent employment. We are able to track people because if for instance, you're unemployed and then we pay you, if you exhaust your benefit, but when you work, the employer will give us information and we are able to know that at this point in time you are back at work. I think that tracking we are able to do. However, if for instance, you're out of the system, obviously you're correct, it will be difficult for us to track you in that instance. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Yes, see, because the DA has spoken. They didn't say much. Any more questions?
But I won't ask any questions because what I was going to ask, I know when you come back for your annual report, you'll put it in. So I won't ask it. Tell me the question. But because it is not us, I know you'll bring it back. Can we? Thank you very much for your patience, members, both the people from the department and the members of parliament. We have taken more time than we were allocated. We had to do this because we wanted to satisfy ourselves. And hope to meet with you again soon. But as I've said, we'll really send some recommendations to the department as soon as it is possible. You win today, you won't win next time. Because of time. And thank you, the meeting is at 10.
Ma'am, did you arrange a bus for us to get back to...
Yeah,
what time would it be leaving?
If you're going to the car, I think I'm trying to bus leaves at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, from downstairs. All right, thank you.
We will be, if you just take 10 minutes, this is the meeting that is a study group of time. It will be 10 minutes, by 6 will be out. It depends on you.
Thank you, madam.
No, we finished the question.
Okay.